The man in front walked backwards as he said, "Por favor, don't make us blow your head all over Señor Madrigal's lunch." 45. Court looked over the man's shoulder and saw the room was some sort of meeting hall. Against the far wall, a row of picnic tables full of food and soft drinks was laid out. A dozen armed men stood around, watching the procession moving towards them across the dirt floor. Seated at the end of the tables, facing Court, was a lone man with a plate of beans. He was sopping them up with corn tortillas. He finished his tortilla, then took a long swig of Tecate beer from a can. A half dozen men stood behind him. They all wore either simple straw hats or baseball caps. Only after he had placed the can back on the table did he look up at the American surrounded by his men with their guns pressed to his head. The man in front scooted to the side, lowered his pistol somewhat, but he kept it trained on the chest of the gray man. Finally, Court got a good look at the man he'd come to see. Constantino Madrigal looked more like a campesino, a peasant, than a drug lord. He was in his 50s, heavy, more big than fat, with a mustache and bushy hair that was still more black than gray, but just. His denim shirt was open, and his hairy chest gleamed from sweat on either side of a simple wire cross medallion. He wore a ball cap on his head. He folded up another tortilla, dipped it in black beans, tore a bite from the soggy bread. Through chews, he said,
"Gray man, they call you El Hombre de Gris."
Madrigal lifted his beer and used it as a pointer, jabbed it out at Gentry.
"Nobody gets a meeting with me. Nobody. But everybody is talking about you. Everybody is asking me, 'Did you see that gringo on TV in Puerto Vallarta? You are like a movie star. I had to meet you.'"
Madrigal stuck a wet finger into a small pile of white powder on the table next to his lunch. Then he jammed the finger into his mouth, sucking off the cocaine. This act was followed by a swig of Tecate. Court said,
"Thank you for seeing me. You have killed a lot of black suit sicarios. More than my men have."
He looked around him at the gunmen as he sipped more beer, as if waiting for an explanation from his staff. No one said anything. Court looked to his left and right, on both sides of the muzzles of stainless steel revolvers pressed into his cheekbones.
"Can you ask your men to lower their guns? I'd hate for one of them to sneeze. I came here showing you respect. I only ask you to give me the same courtesy."
Madrigal smiled as he folded another tortilla.
"I am showing you lots of respect, gringo. You don't think this is respect? You should see how I treat men I do not respect. I know what you can do. You may have a way to kill me still. I don't know."
"I couldn't kill you if I wanted to." Court was not above a little ass-kissing at the moment.
"Then if that wasn't a plan, what can I do for you?"
"I came to offer my services, free of charge."
"Tus servicios?"
"Your services?"
"Yes.
I would like your help and your blessing in going after los traje negros." Madrigal waved his men back. They lowered their weapons and stepped to the side. Still, there were 12 men with firearms within 5 steps of the American assassin. The narco drummed his thick fingers on the picnic table.
"Haven't you been doing that all week without my help?"
"I am talking about a larger scale operation." The drug lord shrugged, motioned for Gentry to sit down. Court took a metal chair on the opposite side of the table. Madrigal spoke while a man with an AK-47 popped open a can of Tecate and placed it in front of Court.
"I am not at war with De La Rocha. I don't want war with De La Rocha. There is enough war going on now. DLR has his plaza, and I have mine. And I have enough troubles fighting the army. I'd rather just watch you kill his people without getting involved."
He laughed.
"That's more fun."
The men in the room laughed behind their gun barrels. Court did not understand everything Madrigal had said. He had a thick Mexican mountain accent peppered with impenetrable colloquialisms, and Court had learned the majority of his Spanish in Spain and South America. A young man was called from across the room. He sat down next to Madrigal.
"My son will translate. We call him Chingarito."
Court silently translated the boy's nickname, then wondered what kind of man would call his son Little Fucker. Court did not ask the question aloud. The kid was barely 16. He wore a baseball cap with a gold marijuana leaf emblem stitched on it. He looked somewhat excited to be called to the table for this responsibility. He translated his father's reticence about war with the black suits. Court switched to English. Did you know DLR was given intelligence on your contacts in South America by the Central Intelligence Agency? The boy translated. Madrigal shook his head.
No? How do you know this?
A man in the CIA told me, and DLR himself told me. He wants access to some of your production.
He won't get it.
Maybe not. Maybe he will just do what he can to hurt your production. That would strengthen him, wouldn't it? Constantino Madrigal called another man over, spoke into the man's ear for a moment, then he looked back to Gentry.
Daniel De La Rocha's father was a wise man, a competitor, of course, but a good businessman. Daniel is a loco, insane. He has tried to implicate me in the assassination attempt of him by the GOPES on his yacht, and then he tried to implicate me in the assassination of the families of the GOPES officers. But that is his style, not mine. High profile, high body count, psychological warfare. All that time in the military cooked his brain, made him a mad killer, an unreasonable man. Now they say he worships a street idol from the barrios.
Constantino Madrigal shook his head in disgust.
The business and intelligence end of his operation is actually run by his consigliera, a gentleman named Calvo. Calvo is my enemy, but I respect him. He is smarter than any 10 of these stupid pendejos I have working for me.
He waved his arm around the room, and a couple of his men chuckled. The younger Madrigal relayed all this to Gentry, and then the father continued.
If Calvo found out who I was working with in South America to fabricate the product and to get it to Mexico, and if De La Rocha decided he wanted to go to war with me, it would cost me much time and money. Money I have, but that is not how I want to spend my time.
I can prevent that, Court said before the son finished the translation.
By shooting a few of his men?
No. With your help, I can harass his operation a lot more than that. I can turn his attention to me, away from you, and you can take steps on your side to protect your interests in South America. He won't even know you are involved. When the translation was finished, Madrigal sat quietly for a moment. The man Madrigal conferred with earlier was still standing behind him. The man leaned forward, but the narco boss stayed him with his hand while he thought. His son did not say another word. Finally, Madrigal looked at Gentry.
You are alone. You are not working for the American government. This I know.
Court nodded.
Then why are you doing this?
DLR has something I want.
The Gamboa woman.
Gentry was pleased that these rough-looking cowboys up here in a remote mountain hideout knew about Laura. It meant Los Vaqueros had an intelligence arm with some access to info on the black suits. He nodded. I have one mission, and that is to get DLR to release Laura because it is too expensive and dangerous for him to keep her.
Young Daniel can be very stubborn.
Gentry did not blink. And so can I.
What do you want from me?
Asked Constantino. Intelligence and material support.
Men?
No, I work alone.
What do you mean, material support?
Guns and a pickup truck. Madrigal smiled widely, did another finger of wet cocaine, followed by another swig of canned beer. He laughed as he said,
You sound like a man from Sinaloa.
Court smiled himself. So we have a deal?
I was born in a villa in Sinaloa called Matalo.
Court translated the town's name silently. The village was called Kill Him in Spanish. Madrigal continued.
The black suits are army officers, city dwellers, college graduates, men from Mexico City primarily. They are cruel. See, they are very cruel. But De La Rocha and his organization are not outlaws. We, Los Vaqueros, we are the mountains. We are the outlaws. Our people have been fighting and killing for hundreds of years. We have been cattle rustlers. We have been highway robbers. We've raided Indian camps for their women, army barracks for their guns. We've robbed banks for their money.
The big man sipped beer and smiled. Mentally, Gentry realized the man was in a happy place.
Now it is drugs to the USA. So there is more money involved, but I don't care. I am a warlord. I don't give a damn about the money. It is the fight that I love.
I'll fight the hell out of DLR for you, Señor Madrigal. Another pause from the narco boss. He stroked his mustache and sipped beer.
The leaders of the enterprises here in Mexico, do not touch one another's families.
I am not planning on going after his family. I am only asking for information about his drug operations. It will get very, very bloody, but it won't get personal. Chingarito translated. Madrigal sipped his tecate and thought some more. Finally, he motioned over his shoulder.
This is Hector Serna, my intelligence chief. I will have the two of you work directly together. Less chance for Atonis.
Rats. Serna's English was superb. He said, informants, all organizations have them. We are no different.
So you have access to rats in the black suits? People who can give you information on their whereabouts?
We monitor the movements of the leadership of Los Traje Negros. Of course we do. They do the same to us.
So you know where they are at all times?
At all times, no. But if they communicate their movements to anyone who might also be on our pay, then yes, we hear of it. For example, we know the black suits will be in Puerto Vallarta tomorrow. They have contacted their people in the local police and have let them know. If they need to go to a hotel for a meeting, if they need a street blocked off for their security, if they need cars moved out of a parking lot so that they can eat at a restaurant adjacent to it, then we will hear of it from our contacts in the local police.
Interesting, said Gentry. Then he looked at Madrigal. Could you arrange for me to get to Puerto Vallarta?
Of course,
Madrigal said, as he stood and extended a hand. Court put out his hand, shook the hand of a murderer of men, women, and children, a torturer of hundreds, a man who epitomized most every reasonable person's personification of evil.
Gracias, amigo.
46. At 8 o'clock the next morning, Court Gentry sat in an old black Mazda pickup truck in a parking lot in the Puerto Vallarta Marina. 20 yards from his dirty windshield, tens of millions of dollars of yachts and other pleasure craft gently rocked in unison on the water. The morning sun warmed a pair of iguanas on the rocks along the promenade. Out his driver's side window, a posh apartment building loomed 5 stories high. Out his passenger side window, a long row of tiendas and businesses that had not yet opened for the day sat dark and quiet. Gentry was on the phone with Ramsey Cienfuegos Cortillo. Ramsey's had hooked up with men in Mexico City he trusted. He was still lying low, but Court had called his old phone number, and a recorded message directed him to a new mobile. Court called that, and Ramsey's called him back minutes later. Court had contacted the federal officer to give him a warning. Court let him know he was getting intelligence and support from the Madrigal cartel, but he wanted his friend in the federal police to know he wasn't working for Los Vaqueros. As far as Court Gentry was concerned, he was working for Laura. Look, Ramses, this is going to get ugly. I don't know what you have told those around you about me, about you working with me.
I have said nothing. I moved my family to a friend's apartment in Miami, and the people I am working with only know that Martin and I survived the attack on the yacht, but Martin was killed in Tequila. These men know better than to ask more questions.
You trust these guys?
Without hesitation, Ramses said,
I trust them.
They have all suffered greatly at the hands of Los Traje Negros.
Good.
These are honest men. We can help you go after Laura.
Court paused, looked through the dirty windshield at a middle-aged bald man leaving the apartment building, taking his small poodle for a walk along a grassy strip that rimmed a shopping center just outside of the marina. Then he said,
If you know honest men, let's keep them honest. What I am about to do, I don't want to involve them.
Just what are you going to do, Joe?
I am going to scorch the earth. I'm going to murder,
torture, and defile. I am going to go ballistic on the motherfuckers who have Laura Gamboa, and I am going to get her back by killing everything in my path. I am not going to play by the rules. There are no rules here, amigo. I am talking about the rules of humanity. I am prepared to violate every last one of them.
Dios santo,
Ramses muttered.
I have never met anyone like you who was, how can I say it, not on the other side.
I am different from other good guys, because I am not afraid to go down to the level of my enemies. If you know guys down here, good guys, guys who can still sleep at night, let's not involve them. I'd rather do what I'm about to do affiliated with Madrigal than with the good guys. Does that make sense?
You are a good man.
Thanks, Ramses. But you won't stay that way when I'm done. You are going to think I am the sickest son of a bitch you've ever met.
You have my number. I will help you in any way I can, and not involve anyone else. If you need something, anything, call me.
Thanks. Court hung up the phone, watched the man with the dog for a moment, and then opened the door to the Mazda truck. 40 seconds later, the poodle was all alone and barking wildly, his leash wrapped around a signpost in front of a tienda that had not yet opened for business. The dank, dark, 10x10 storage room smelled of mold. Lizards and spiders crawled the walls and hung from the ceiling, casting frightening shadows when they moved in front of the 2 million candle-power flashlight that Gentry had positioned in the corner, facing the center of the storage room. There, in the center, sat Captain Javier Garza-Guerrero of the Puerto Vallarta Police. According to Madrigal's intelligence chief, Garza was a paid sicario for the black suits, and he oversaw the cartel's security operations here on the west coast of Mexico, from the Guatemalan border in the south to the southern edge of Sinaloa in the north. He had been instrumental in helping De La Rocha's efforts in the region, protecting his drug shipments, his production facilities, his safe houses. Even Daniel's motorcade travel through the city was often aided by squad cars with flashing lights. Gentry ripped the duct tape off the bald man, tearing mustache hair out by the roots. Captain Garza's left eye was swollen shut, the result of his face's impact with the pavement outside the storage room. His hands were strapped behind his back. His clothes had been cut off with a long, thin fillet knife. For the first hour, Garza had tried to be reasonable with Court, had given him the locations of the meth labs that he knew about up in the mountains to the east. He thought this might buy his freedom. He felt the man must certainly be working for one of the other cartels, and if Garza could only convince him he would play ball, then whoever had sent this man would see that a well-connected police officer with knowledge of the inner workings of De La Rocha's enterprises would be much more valuable alive than dead. But then the gringo stepped in front of the light. He showed himself. The kidnapper made no attempt whatsoever to hide his face from his victim, and the dirty cop knew what that meant. Captain Garza was fully aware that now his only chance was to connect himself with Los Traje Negros, to frighten his kidnapper into letting him go. He shouted,
"You lay another finger on me, and DLR will send Spider after you!"
The American reached out a hand, pointed his finger, and pushed it hard into the sweaty forehead of Javier Garza. He finished the motion with a shove. Then the Norte Americano looked back over his shoulder at the garage door to the storeroom.
"When will he come? I would very much like to see him."
"You will see him, gringo!"
Garza tried to control his anger.
"Look, if you let me go right now, I'll forget this. But if you—"
"Oh, Javier, you will never forget this. Not for the rest of your life."
Court looked down to his watch. "You can remember for at least 3 minutes, can't you?"
"What do you want?"
Garza's question came out in a scream. The American shrugged.
"Nothing from you, asshole."
"Nothing? Then what is this? What are you doing?"
"I'm just a force of nature, Xavier. You have lived by the sword."
The gringo turned away, disappeared into a dark corner, returned seconds later with a large metal cleaver.
"You will die by the sword, or in this case, by the meat cleaver."
"You are with Los Vaqueros?"
"No."
"Then who?"
"With the United States of America."
Garza cocked his sweaty bald head.
"DEA? You are not DEA."
"No, I'm not."
Garza thought he understood now. This man was some anti-drug avenger.
"Look, we are just businessmen, all of us down here. We only provide the supply. You gringos provide the demand. We just respond to that demand.
So the guy who makes kiddie porn isn't responsible as long as there is someone who wants to buy it? Garza looked at the kidnapper.
You know nothing. You are just a rich American. You don't understand our culture.
Actually, I'm getting the hang of it. I'm going to chop off your head and put it in a bag. Does that sound a little like your culture?